Hello and welcome to edition number 1834 of the Sid Vale and East Devon Talking newspaper, being read on Tuesday the 20th of August 2024 at the Dissenters Hall, Sidmouth. This week's editor is Ruth Rose, and our readers are Gerald Wealdon, Anne-Marie Irish, Geoffrey Ogden and Jan Derbyshire. We suggest you could now open your curtains at around 5:30 in the morning and close them around 9 p.m. in the evening. Things have calmed down somewhat since the end of the Folk Festival in Sidmouth, but there is still plenty happening, including reports on exam results for 18-year-olds. Part 1 starts with news from Sidmouth, including an article about local policing. Then we have three reviews of Folk Festival concerts. In Honiton, the Carers Support Group celebrates its 10th anniversary. And finally, we have articles concerning East Devon, including a project to reduce the use of antibiotics.
This is Gerald with news from Sidmouth. A park project is set to continue improving a Sidmouth beauty spot. The Friends of Glen Goyle, FOG, set up by the Vision Group for Sidmouth in the spring of 2021, has been working to restore the park, which was previously neglected. The project has brought the park back to a more balanced state, making improvements to increase biodiversity. Over the summer, several groups visited the park to see the improvements made by FOG. The first visitors were members of the Sampson Society in late June. They were shown around the park by FOG member John McGregor, who pointed out the new plantings and the fernery created by Ed Dolphin, which showcases the full set of ferns from the Sid Valley, first noted by Peter Orlando Hutchinson. After their tour, the Sampson Society and FOG members enjoyed tea and discussions in the southern section of Glen Goyle, owned by the Belmont Hotel. Phil Lee of the FOG steering group said, "We would like to thank the Sampson Society for their interest in our project. They are welcome to visit again whenever they wish." In mid-July, the judges of Britain in Bloom visited Glen Goyle. The FOG project was entered for an In Your Neighbourhood award, as well as the RHS Parks and Gardens category. John McGregor, a member of FOG, said, "The judges seem very impressed with all that's happening in Glen Goyle." The same day, Katie Wilkinson, the Wilder Communities team leader at the Devon Wildlife Trust, also visited. She exchanged ideas with the council horticulturist Paul on wildlife-friendly plantings at Glen Goyle and other sites. They discussed the possibility of adding bat and owl boxes, hedgehog runs and bug hotels, as well as restoring the old pond. Katie praised the work done by the Friends of Glen Goyle, calling it the wonderful Glen Goyle. The FOG project encourages volunteers to join them on Thursday mornings to help with the ongoing improvements. Since the project began, the park has been transformed into a place of life, charm and greater biodiversity, according to the FOG steering group. Police across East Devon are having a busy summer with plenty of community events and engagement with residents and visitors. On Saturday, August the 17th, officers from the Sidmouth neighbourhood team hosted a crime prevention session at Newton Poffleford Village Hall in Station Road. PC Tom Driver from the team said, "This is a great opportunity to meet your local officers, get valuable crime prevention tips, and discuss any concerns you may have. Let's work together to make your neighbourhood a safer place." Officers in Sidmouth and other parts of East Devon have been out and about patrolling the busy 70th anniversary week-long Sidmouth Folk Festival, which finished on Friday, August the 9th. Honiton Show on August the 1st, the Axvale Show and Seaton's Summer Celebration in June. Members of the Sidmouth Neighbourhood Police Team will also be in the town chatting to visitors at Sidmouth Regatta later this month and keeping everyone safe on the busy August bank holiday weekend. Police Community Support Officer Sarah Rees is available to chat to residents and take questions or give crime prevention advice at Sidmouth Library in Blackmore Drive on Wednesday, September the 25th, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. After this event, she will visit the Oasis Drop-In Cafe, which is around the corner from the library. This session is for anyone who wants company to talk to others and take part in crafts, games, and enjoy the free refreshments on offer. East Devon local officers will also be at the Seaton Carnival on September the 7th and Axminster Carnival on September the 21st, events which both attract large crowds. Sidmouth Carnival is due to take place on September the 28th and Honiton on October the 26th. The team says, if you see the officers out and about, please say hello and have a chat. For regular updates, please follow Rural East Devon Police on Facebook or visit the Devon and Cornwall Police website. Sidmouth Hospice at Home has launched its first coffee morning campaign, aiming to unite the community in cake-filled gatherings throughout September. People are encouraged to host bake sales, have coffee mornings at home, organise cake breaks in the office, or simply meet a friend for tea and cake. Fundraising manager Sharon Coombs said, unlike the vast majority of our counterpart hospice services, we receive no additional funding to meet our costs, which represent excellent value, but will be more than £890,000 in the coming year. The fact that we are funded by the community for the community makes Sidmouth and Sid Valley a very special place. To host a coffee morning, contact Sidmouth Hospice at Home on 01395 578 707, email info@sidmouth-hospicehome.org.uk.
Hello, this is Anne Marie with three reviews from the Folk Festival. It was a sell-out concert at the Harbour Hotel on Wednesday evening for three acts who've made it their mission to take folk music back to its traditional roots and reinvigorate it for a new generation. It seems like no time at all since Granny's Attic were the new kids on the folk block, so it came as a surprise to discover that they've now been together for 15 years. Cohen Braithwaite Kilcoyne, melodeon, concertina, vocals, George Sansom, guitar, vocals, and Lewis Wood, violin, vocals, are busy with their individual projects these days, but still make time to play together, and their joy in each other's company is evident. Opening for Granny's Attic were two up-and-coming young acts, vocal trio Culversakes, Seb Stone, Matt Quinn and Lizzie Hardingham, close harmony renditions of traditional songs, are simply spine-tingling, and it's a certainty we'll be hearing more of them, as we surely will of prize-winning duo Shay Bradley, guitar, and vocalist Rhiannon Kenny, vocals, a.k.a. Witchbury. The future of folk is in safe hands. I will now play you a medley of my greatest hit, says Ralph McTell with a wry smile as he tunes up for Streets of London. He knows he must play it, After all, it's the song everyone knows, the one that went to number 2 in the charts in 1974, earning him an Ivor Novello Award. But it's also the song that brought homelessness and urban poverty to the world's attention. And sadly, its message is as relevant today as it was 50 years ago. Now one of folk's elder statesmen, McTell has seen life from many sides. Soldier, labourer, teacher, and travelling musician. And his experience informs his songs, some of which are autobiographical, others inspired by those he met or by artists he admires. Accompanied by his fine guitar playing, the master storyteller takes us by the hand and leads us through his own memories. I don't think about you, Mr. Connaughton, Brighton Bell, barges, and imagined tales of his heroes, Avalon John, Summer Girls, West 4th Street, and Jones. And the biting social comment is there too, most searingly in Sabrine, the heartbreaking story of an unborn baby, the sole survivor of a missile strike in Gaza. A sublime and thought-provoking performance, among the most memorable of the week. The rock and pop world has had its supergroups. Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young and Cream spring to mind. And now the folk world has the Melsons, a vocal powerhouse supergroup, uniting two Northern English harmony quartets, the Melrose Quartet and the Wilson family. The Melrose Quartet from Sheffield comprises two duos, Nancy Kerr and James Fagan, and Jess and Richard Arrowsmith. On the Wilson side, there's Tom, Chris, Steve and Mike from the a cappella singing fraternity. The Wilson family, who hail from Billingham, Teesside. The idea of amalgamating the two vocal groups came accidentally when all the performers were asked to step in for a finale to the 2018 Hartlepool Folk Festival. Mixing and matching their repertoires, the eight of them enjoyed the performance so much that despite their busy schedules, they can still join forces for occasional concerts. Such was the case at this year's Sidmouth Folk Festival, where the Melsons performed two shows. The first in the large Ham Marquee with its modern PA system on Saturday, and the second an acoustic concert at the smaller Methodist church on the Sunday evening. Steve Wilson explained that they'd had all the electronic trickery of the PA system at the Ham, but they wanted to perform at the much smaller Methodist church because of the building's natural acoustics. And they used these acoustics to great effect, as the eight voices joined forces, often with intricate harmonies. They created a stirring, evocative sound that was magical. There was also plenty of humorous banter, the eight of them clearly enjoying each other's company. Santa Georgia, a tribute to multiculturalism, was an early highlight, along with Tony Rose's Little Fishes and a sublime April Morning. Then the mood changed for a sombre take on Bonnie Light Horseman before lifting again for a joyful Bampton Fair. Jess led them all on her powerful All the Salt in the Sea before Nancy stepped forth to lead Getting a Rise. All too soon, the show was over, but not before a rousing John Ball nearly took the roof off. It was a tremendous, unforgettable evening.
And now it's Geoffrey with news from Honiton. Honiton Carers Support Group has celebrated its 10th anniversary. In addition to that, the group also held its annual general meeting on July the 31st. The event was held at the Methodist Church and there was a celebratory cake baked by Julie Courtney Rowland. Guests and carers enjoyed some cake while socialising. Tracy Voisey, team vicar of the Honiton Mission Community, gave a brief talk and praised the group for their work. Chairman Winnie Cameron read the chairman's report and Treasurer Mark Rich read the accounts report. The committee, who were all very happy to re-stand, were unanimously voted back. On August the 7th, the group split for two different events for the first time. Part of the group, led by volunteer and committee member Barbara East, was invited by Devon Communities Together to visit Gappers Farm near Newton Abbott for their open day. Barbara said the minibus driver for the day arrived at the Honiton pickup point at 10:30 a.m. and all enjoyed the ride to Gapper Farm. The other group organised a cuppa and chat social at the kitchen at Coombe Garden Centre, where carers caught up over laughter and cafe chatter. At the farm, Barbara's team was greeted by Hannah and Anderson Jones from Devon Communities Together and the farm family Dave and Claire and their two children. The adventurers experienced a tractor ride, which included a commentary from Claire. The group enjoyed sheep shearing and natural craft making activities. Honiton carers are welcoming more hands to join their cause. Honiton families will continue to benefit from the support of a Dementia UK Admiral nurse following a recent £10,000 donation from East Devon Crematorium. Entirely funded by the charity Dementia Friendly Honiton, Faye Valentine has been the Admiral nurse for 6 years and has been a huge asset to the local community, helping people and their families impacted by dementia. Faye is now moving on to lead the Dementia UK National Helpline. She would be greatly missed, and all the families and volunteers of the charity extend their sincere thanks and best wishes to Faye. Following a cheque presentation, Heather Penwarden, BEM, Chair of the Dementia Friendly Honiton, said, "Wow, this is amazing. We are so grateful for the generous support from the team and customers of East Devon Crematorium. Added to our own fundraising pot, this will secure the post of Honiton's Admiral Nurse for a further 2 years, giving so many carers and families much needed reassurance for the immediate future. Admiral Nurses are specialist dementia nurses that provide one-to-one support, expert guidance and practical solutions to help families and people with dementia through the most complex of circumstances. This includes advice regarding family communication and relationships, the management of symptoms such as sleep disturbance, or the provision of knowledge and skills required to deal with problems such as incontinence or mobility. Nick cares for his wife Penny and has first-hand experience of receiving the support of the Honiton Admiral Nurse. When my wife was first diagnosed with dementia by the mental health team, the two nurses who came to give the diagnosis gave lots of advice to both of us. They recommended the Admiral Nurse, and the first time Faye visited us, she and my wife gelled completely. From then on, she was a great comfort and help with many things, including carer support, suitable diets, and was always at the end of a phone to help and visit us at home when necessary. We are both grateful for her help, advice and care, and she will be surely missed. We look forward to meeting Faye's replacement in the very near future. In this respect, Heather is pleased to share the news that a new Admiral Nurse has now been appointed, and dementia-friendly Honiton is looking forward to welcoming Jo once she's completed working notice in her current post. The £10,000 donation has been raised through the recycling of metals, which remained after cremation, thanks to the consent and generosity of bereaved families. Devon and Cornwall Police are appealing for witnesses and information following a fatal collision at Smeatharp near Honiton. At around 10:50 a.m. on Saturday, August the 10th, emergency services were called following a single vehicle collision on an unnamed road at the eastern end of Upottery Airfield. A spokesman for the police said the collision involved a Suzuki Bandit motorcycle. As a result of the collision, the rider of the motorcycle, a man in his 60s from the London area, was airlifted to hospital with serious injuries but was pronounced deceased shortly after arrival. Police would like to thank the public for their patience while they investigated the scene. Officers are appealing for any witnesses who were in the area at the time of the collision to make contact on 101 or via the website, quoting reference 5024 020 1088. The annual Cyril Dan Trophy at Honiton Golf Club was won this week on a very hot day. The competition, which is usually held earlier in the year, was postponed due to cold, wet weather. Cyril Dan, a former member and supporter of the Tuesday Mixed Group, is remembered through this tribute tournament. Cyril's daughter, Caroline Bowles, donated the trophy to commemorate her father after his passing in 2022. The competition involved a drawn mixed team Stableford, where the two best scores were counted. Despite the hot weather, good scores were presented across the competition. The Dan Trophy was handed to the winning team by Caroline herself. The champions, Anne Trailing, Sue Ritchie, Paul Ritchie and Harry Lawrence, scored 82 points, almost equal, divided among them. Runners-up Vera Richardson, Anne Devlin, John Harvey and Frank Penny scored a respectable 77 points.
Hello, here's Jan with news from around East Devon. East Devon District Council is considering putting pressure on the government to change the law so that unfinished developments are completed sooner. Councillors routinely express frustration that some developers start building work but then halt progress, often for financial reasons. This can be problematic for authorities which have to show that they have approved a certain number of homes per year, and crucially, that they have 5 years' worth of land that is going to be developed. If work on some land stops, this can put pressure on councils to approve more applications to meet that 5 year requirement. Councillor Mike Howe, independent of Clyst Vale, Vice Chairman of the Strategic Planning Committee, suggested that developers should be forced to complete projects within a certain time frame, and if this date is missed, then they should face the prospect of a financial cost or the option to give up their planning permission. He said, "I've long held the belief that if an applicant gets planning permission and they make a material start but don't continue to build, then after 3 or 5 years, even if it is not completed, they should have to start paying business rates or council tax. I believe there needs to be a carrot and stick approach, as I don't think developers should be able to sit on a site and not pay any council tax or rates on it. And if they don't want the site any longer, then they should have the option to rescind their planning permission so they don't have to pay any charges on it." Ed Freeman, who is an assistant director of the council's planning department, said this was not something the council could pursue by itself, and that legislation would be needed to be able to charge business rates or council tax on buildings that don't yet exist. The Strategic Planning Committee agreed to ask the Cabinet to ask the government to consider passing legal changes to incentivise developers to complete the sites they have planning permission for within a maximum time frame. A bidding process for around £10 million worth of unspent cash amassed by East Devon District Council from contributions made by developers as part of planning approval for their schemes is set to begin soon. The money comes from Community Infrastructure Levies, CIL, and what are known as Section 106 contributions. CIL is a charge that local authorities can set on new developments to raise funds to help infrastructure, facilities and services, such as schools or transport improvements that are needed to support new homes and businesses. Section 106 cash can be used for highways improvements, providing facilities such as play parks, and can also be linked to affordable housing. The Council's latest infrastructure funding statement shows it has around £10 million worth of unspent funds. Staff shortages in its planning department have meant that the Council has had difficulty allocating the money and couldn't produce a statement for the 2022-23 financial year, outlining how much it had received from such contributions. Councillor Olive Todd, Liberal Democrat of Wimpole and Rockbere, who chairs the Strategic Planning Committee, said the Council now had a CIL working group and a new team of officers. Ed Freeman, an assistant director in the planning department, said they hope to create a shortlist from bids from strategic infrastructure providers such as Devon County Council and the NHS by the autumn. He said, "We have agreed an outline of the process and put that in motion, so we are hoping to approach providers in the next few weeks to start that process." Councillor Dan Ledger, independent from Seaton, said CIL and Section 106 money could be earning interest. He said, "I'd like to propose that any future interest we get from this type of money is ring-fenced for infrastructure funding." While a motion was approved to ask the Council's Cabinet to consider this, Deputy Leader Paul Hayward, independent from Axminster, warned about unintended consequences. He said, "It will have a significant impact on the Council's budget. We need to be careful what we wish for. I understand from this committee's perspective, the interest should be ring-fenced, but we need to find out the implications, as while it might be a laudable and worthy motion, it could have detrimental effects elsewhere, which need to be unpicked." The health provider in Devon has cut antibiotic usage by nearly two-thirds by introducing point-of-care testing for patients suffering a bad sore throat. In December, Townsend, Axminster and Seaton and Collerton Primary Care Network began testing patients with a suspected Streptococcus A bacterial infection. They found that up to 65% of those who would have been ordinarily prescribed antibiotics did not actually require them. After 3 months, the health provider saw a 55 to 65% reduction in immediate and deferred antibiotic prescriptions when compared against standard processes for testing and care. Current NICE, which is the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence guidelines, recommend using a symptom scoring system to identify which patients with suspected strep A need treatment with antibiotics. However, point-of-care testing, in combination with those decision-making tools, provides healthcare professionals with robust, evidence-based support in the fight against antimicrobial resistance. Dr. Rob Daniels, GP at the Devon Primary Care Network and senior clinical lecturer at the University of Exeter, said, "Accurately differentiating between viral and bacterial infections in a primary care setting can be challenging even for highly experienced clinicians. Having access to a rapid test like Abbott's IDNOW, which with an accuracy greater than 90% is much more definitive than symptom scoring, helps us to avoid using antibiotics in viral sore throats and therefore target antibiotics to patients most in need." Antimicrobial resistance occurs when the microorganisms that cause disease, including bacteria, viruses, fungi, and parasites, are no longer affected by antibiotics, the antimicrobial medicines used to kill them, prevent them, and treat the disease. As resistance continues to increase, more people will suffer longer as infections become more difficult to treat. And this results in longer hospital admissions, routine surgical procedures becoming more dangerous to perform, and higher death rates. Seaton Pharmacy was also engaged as part of the study, which highlighted the role of community pharmacies. Dr. Daniels said, "Ensuring that patients are only receiving antibiotics when they need them not only supports antimicrobial stewardship, but it also protects the antibiotic supply chain, reducing the chances of shortages."
And this is Ruth back for news of what's on around East Devon. On Thursday this week, the 22nd of August, there will be a tour of St Giles's Church in Sidbury, starting at 2:30 p.m. The guided tour of this ancient church includes the Saxon crypt, and the tour happens every Thursday until 26th of September. We can only accept cash, and the charge is £3.50 each. Also on Thursday, the Ottery St Mary Silver Band are holding a concert at Connaught Gardens in Sidmouth, starting at 7:45. Sit back and enjoy a summer's evening performance of brass band music. The concert is free and will be held weather permitting. On Friday, the 23rd of August, there is an event at Axminster. It is called Axminster Eats Boutique. Starts at 4 p.m. and is an evening street food market held at St Mary's Church, Silver Street, Axminster. For more details, please telephone 07970 857 696. On Friday, 23rd of August, there is Knoll Gardens Fun Afternoon. If you meet by the big log near the southern pedestrian access to Knoll Gardens in Sidmouth at 2 p.m, there will be nature treasure hunts and craft activities, as well as a teddy bears picnic. Accompanied children are welcome, aged 4 to 14 years, and entry is free. And finally, a date for something much further away. The dates for this year's Exeter Cathedral Christmas Market have just been confirmed. The event, which has been known to draw in crowds of more than 500,000 people, will run from Friday, November the 15th until Sunday, December the 15th. Organisers are already making preparations, with applications to trade at one of more than 100 stalls having already closed. So they hope to welcome you there. And now for part two of the news, starting with more news from Sidmouth about plans for regatta weekend. Next, we hear about a cricket match in Ottery St Mary, and then news from Axminster Seton and Beer, where Pecorama is celebrating its 50th birthday. And finally, we have some general items, including an article on butterflies.
Sidmouth College's Year 13 cohort is celebrating A-level and BTEC results. Individual successes include Elsie Connick heading to Reading University after receiving A-star, A-star, A grades. Mia Kirsch is going to University of East Anglia to study medicine in September. Her results were A-star, A-A. Poppy Tewton will go to Bristol University after receiving 3 A's. The school commended students. The results that our students have received today should be celebrated, with the number of our A-star and A grades increasing by 6%. All of the staff at the college are incredibly proud of all these students. A very large percentage of students will be moving on to university, including Exeter, Reading, Bath, Manchester, Southampton and Bristol. In a website statement, the college said, "I would like to thank all of the staff at the college for their continued dedication to our students, the high quality teaching, learning and support that they have provided has enabled our students to be successful today. I would also like to thank our parent community who have worked alongside us in partnership over the last 7 years. My final thank you goes to Mrs. Sue Hurley and the team of tutors who have worked incredibly closely with the year group during this pivotal year, providing ongoing support and guidance." Mrs. Hurley, head of sixth form, said, An unbelievable set of students should be proud of what they've achieved this year. It must be remembered that the last 4 years have not been easy, and the students have managed to successfully navigate all of the issues that have been thrown at them. Their results are a testament to their academic ability, resilience, and determination to show what they are capable of. They've been an asset to the college and will continue to thrive in what they do post 18. In addition to their academic studies, the year group have also been involved in a number of extracurricular activities, proving they are all-round individuals who have developed excellent employability skills as a result. Our students have been a credit to themselves, their parents, and the Sidmouth College community as a whole. I'm going to miss them a great deal, but I look forward to hearing about what they achieve during the next stage of their educational journey. Community-spirited residents in Sidford came together to set up their own social club this week. The Friends of Orchard Close started when residents Rachel and Liz wanted to improve the areas outside their homes. Together, they tidied the gardens and built raised beds, and last month invited neighbours from across the generations, many of whom hadn't met or spoken before, to enjoy a garden party with games, music, and opportunities to chat. With help from the council's communities team and a grant from the Community Initiative Fund, Friendships, as well as the community garden, are flourishing, with plans for more events, garden supplies, and a new shed. Rachel and Liz said they are looking forward to making our close beautiful once more. The community initiative is available to East Devon District Council tenants to support neighbourhood projects. If you've got an idea for improving your area, please get in touch via the council website. The plan for the 2024 Sidmouth Regatta has been announced, but the popular air show won't be taking place. The regatta runs from Friday, August the 23rd, until Sunday, August the 25th, with a range of events planned around the town throughout the weekend. But the Sidmouth Air Show has been cancelled this year. The regatta is hosted by Sidmouth Town Council, Visit Sidmouth, and other community organisations, charities and businesses. The Saturday sees the regatta start with races from a variety of clubs and organisations, including surf and life-saving clubs, sailing clubs and gig rowers, as well as a variety of family-friendly activities and performances. A giant firework display takes place every Saturday night at the Park Royal, creating a carnival atmosphere. The schedule includes Friday, August the 23rd, 2 to 4pm, free teddy bears picnic at Knoll Gardens, a nature treasure hunt and crafting. Saturday, August the 24th, 10:30am to 5pm, the sailing club will hold four races from the water sports hub. 11am to 4pm, Sidmouth Rotary Club treasure hunt and prizes at the water sports hub. 2 to 4pm, surf life saving, East Devon Championships at Main Beach. 4 to 8pm, street theatre at Port Royal. 4pm, Sidmouth Giants. 5:30pm, Sidmouth Steppers. 6pm, SVCP Street Theatre, Robin Hood. 7pm, Otter Border Morris and Cayley. 9:15pm, Grand Fireworks Display at Port Royal. Sunday, August the 25th, 10am to 4pm, Sidmouth Gig Club Racing, Water Sports Hub. 10am to 12pm,
Beach Clean Treasure Hunt at the Port Royal Steps. 10:30 to 12 p.m. Sidmouth Sailing Club races, Water Sports Hub. For more information, follow Visit Sidmouth on Facebook or visit their website.
Hello, Anne-Marie again with news from Ottery St Mary. In a cricket match at South Brent, Tipton St John gained a hard-won victory on a damp and misty pitch. Following a successful toss, Tipton opted to field first. For Tipton, Dave Alford took the first three wickets. Alf Frost was the only host team player to thrive, scoring an impressive 59 before being the seventh out. John Buckland caught Adam Cook, LBW. Phil Wright took three wickets for Tipton and ran out one of South Brent's younger players. A commendable last wicket stand by two under-14s added 23 to South Brent's score, ending at 129. Rhys Whittington secured the crucial wicket of Frost and wrapped up the innings with 2 for 22. As the sun rose, Tipton began their innings, reaching 65 for 2, thanks to Luke Phillips' 18 and Mike Bennett's 19. They lost 4 wickets for just 6 runs. Tipton's side seemed endangered, but Dave Thayer and Dave Alford's 60-run 7th wicket stand secured Tipton's victory, sealing the match with just over 3 overs remaining. Post-16 students at the King School received their A-level and BTEC results. The school says students have achieved well with a number of individual successes. The highest attaining students have gained 3 or more A-star A grades, and there are a number progressing to top universities. Head teacher Rob Gammon said, "We wish to recognise the achievements of others who are delighted with the grades they have achieved as a result of their hard work. There are many individual success stories, particularly for those students who have found education over the past 2 years a challenge. These students have shown resilience during their time with us, and this makes today a very special day. This set of examination results has been achieved in the context of a number of years of disruptive education for students. The resilience shown by many has been evident given the challenges that they have faced. It is because of this that we take great delight in celebrating the achievements of our students. These results would also not have been possible without the support of parents and carers and the hard work of staff at the school."
And now it's Geoffrey with news from Birr, Seaton and Axminster. A model railway is celebrating its 50th anniversary. Pecorama, established in 1974, has been a key part of the model railway community for half a century. To celebrate this milestone, Pecorama and its owner Pico are releasing a limited edition gold-themed 009 gauge wagon. There are only 50 of these unique numbered models available, which can be purchased at the Pecorama model railway shop or on their website. One of these wagons will include a golden ticket, offering the winner a VIP experience with a personal tour of the Pico Model Railway factory, collaborating with the design team to create a customised wagon. The winner will also receive a £50 voucher to spend in the Model Railway shop. The exhibition will also host a Golden Trail competition this summer, where visitors can win a £300 voucher by finding small golden objects on the Model Railway layouts. The exhibition has expanded over the years to include a wide collection of layouts, historical displays and interactive exhibits. Michael Pritchard, chairman, said, "We're incredibly proud to celebrate 50 years of our model railway exhibition. This limited edition gold wagon and the golden ticket experience are our way of saying thank you to our loyal visitors and customers who've supported us over the years." Andrew Beard, exhibition manager, said, "Having joined the company nearly 50 years ago myself and building the exhibition from scratch, I'm proud to be part of a legacy that I hope will continue to inspire and delight visitors of all ages for many more years to come. The exhibition was established in 1974 by local businessman Sidney Pritchard and his wife Claudine. It has attracted visitors from all over the world. Seaton Wetlands is calling for enthusiastic volunteers to join the Discovery Hut team. The East Devon District Council Countryside team, which manages Seaton Wetlands, needs volunteers this busy summer season. Volunteers at the Discovery Hut help enhance the visitor experience. Volunteers work in pairs to greet visitors, provide up-to-date information about recent wildlife sightings, and serve refreshments. From the Discovery Hut, visitors to the wetlands can view live footage on the seasonal nest cams, hire pond dipping equipment, and explore the nature table. No prior experience or expertise is needed to become a volunteer. All that's needed is an interest in wildlife, enthusiasm, and a willingness to engage with the public. During summer, the Discovery Hut is open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily. They're seeking additional volunteers to cover shifts from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. or 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. with a particular need for weekend coverage. All volunteers will receive training and have access to an online rota to schedule shifts that fit their availability. Councillor Jeff Jung, EDDC's portfolio holder for Coast, Countryside and the Environment, said volunteering at the Discovery Hut is a fantastic opportunity for local residents to spend more time in nature while sharing their passion for the natural world with visitors of all ages. Regardless of your age or background, volunteering at the Discovery Hut is a rewarding role. Volunteer Jasmine Burgess said, "I love volunteering at the Discovery Hut. I've learnt so much about the wildlife on my doorstep, met so many lovely people, and it's given me a real boost in confidence. I'd encourage anyone who loves nature and meeting new people to get in touch to find out more." For more information about volunteering at the Discovery Hut, please contact the Countryside team via email at wild@eastdevon.gov.uk. Axminster Guildhall will host Lionel Bart's award-winning musical Oliver for this festive season, courtesy of Axminster Drama Club. Based on the novel by Charles Dickens, Oliver follows the story of a small boy with a big heart as he journeys from a desolate workhouse to the paved streets of Victorian London. The musical, scheduled for December 19th, 20th and 21st, will feature memorable songs like Food, Glorious Food and I'd Do Anything. Tickets £14 can be booked via TicketSource. The Axminster Drama Club production is by special arrangement with Cameron McIntosh. Crews from Lyme Regis and Charmouth fought another arson attack at the toilet block in West Street, Axminster. They were called on Thursday, August the 8th at around 1:30 p.m. after reports of another fire within the public loo block on West Street. A Lyme Regis fire station spokesman said, "We used one hose reel and metal buckets to extinguish a small fire." On July the 19th, Axminster Fire Station fought another fire at the loos after reports from members of the public. Crews got to work to investigate using a thermal imaging camera. Crews were met with smouldering toilet roll within the toilets. This fire was believed to be deliberate, and the Police and Crime Commissioner for Devon and Cornwall was informed. It caused a limited amount of damage, and crews made the area safe. After the increase in fires around Axminster, the fire station issued some advice to parents via their website. Thank you.
And it's Jan again with three general articles. The first one is from Ed Dolphin, who is a member of the Sid Valley Biodiversity Group. The local results for the big butterfly count are in, and we're doing better than the national picture, but we could do better. The annual big butterfly count is a huge citizen science project run by Butterfly Conservation every year since 2010. Over 3 weeks, in late July and early August, volunteers find a sunny spot and count how many of 20 different butterflies and day-flying moths they see in a 15-minute period. This year, 80,000 volunteers carried out more than 130,000 counts. the Sid Valley has an active citizen science population who carried out nearly 200 counts. The local picture is quite good. We see far more butterflies than some parts of the country, but this year's local figures are down on last year, probably because of the awful spring weather. The long-term trend is not so bright. People are seeing far fewer butterflies than in the past. The top three butterflies in local counts were the meadow brown, the gatekeeper, and the ringlet. The first two are also the top two nationally. We have more ringlets than other places because we have many areas with the caterpillar's food plant, rank grasses. We're not so lucky when it comes to the small tortoiseshell. This colourful butterfly used to be very common, but sightings have plummeted in recent years. Scientists are unsure whether there are far fewer, or it may be that their breeding cycle has changed with the changing climate, and they are just not flying at the time of the big butterfly count. Further work is needed to get a clearer picture. The two big factors in butterfly populations are the weather and the availability of habitats, particularly food plants for the caterpillars. The count got off to a slow start this year because it rained most days of the first week. But the weather picked up, and so did butterfly numbers. But we were still 15% down on last year by the end. Unsurprisingly, many more butterflies were seen out in the countryside than in gardens, even gardens which are planted to be wildlife friendly. The key factor is not the flowers, but the food plants of the caterpillars and the connectivity between them. Adult butterflies can travel around looking for flowers to provide the nectar they suck up through their long coiled proboscis. And although they might have favourites, they can feed from a wide range of different flowers. Their caterpillars are often more fussy, and so the adults tend to congregate where they can access their own food but also lay eggs. One example is the beautiful six-spot Burnet moth. You can see plenty of their red-spotted metallic blue wings at Jacob's Ladder, where there are plenty of thistles and ragwort flowers for the adults, but also a carpet of bird's foot trefoil, which is the food plant of the caterpillars. It's a similar story with the ringlet and other meadow species, and this explains the big difference in scores from grassland areas managed for wildlife, such as Sid Meadow in the Byes, and those mown regularly, such as the Lawns area. The 11 counts from the long grass areas of the Byes yielded an average of 12 butterflies per 15-minute count. The 7 counts in the Lawns area returned an average of only 4 butterflies per count. There may be clover and daisies flowering among the short grass, but meadow butterflies usually lay their eggs among tussocks of coarse grass, so their caterpillars can feed safely deep in the shelter of the tussocks, and that's where the butterflies seek the nectar that they need for themselves. There is much more information about the local results on the Biodiversity Group website, sidvalleybiodiversity.org. Complaints about the smell of the sea near a beach, ice that has been stolen from a drink, and someone trapped in a jumpsuit are just some of the inappropriate calls received by Devon and Cornwall Police Control Centres recently. On an average day, call handlers deal with 859 emergencies and nearly 1,200 non-emergency calls. These numbers rise significantly at certain times of the year, especially during the summer months when millions of visitors arrive to holiday in Devon, Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly. Police say call handlers are put under significant stress trying to answer calls in a timely manner, to find solutions to callers' issues and to ensure the right response when people need it most. And managers say pressure on emergency services is not helped by a significant number of accidental or inappropriate calls, which tie up staff and prevents them dealing with real emergencies. Assistant Chief Constable Nikki Leeper said, "The force understands that some calls are made accidentally, and the quickest way for us to deal with them is for the caller to stay on the line so we can confirm that they don't need any help. If this happens to you, please don't hang up. Stay on the line and explain what's happened. We will understand. Every call made to 999 is investigated, even when someone hangs up. Calling by accident is not the only reason people hang up. Someone might be scared, unable to talk, or even forced to put the phone down. So we have to investigate to find out what has happened, and it can take up to 20 minutes to confirm all is okay each time a call is terminated. Staying on the line means we can make sure you are okay in a fraction of the time, freeing up our staff to answer more calls and help more people." The force is equally concerned with the number of calls received that should really be directed to other agencies. This month, Devon and Cornwall Police have launched a campaign aimed at informing people who they should call in a variety of scenarios. Miss Leeper said, "We know there are lots of things that people need help with to get sorted out. Everything from swarms of bees, fly tipping, noisy neighbours or lost dogs, to untaxed or abandoned vehicles. All these things are really annoying and you might need support to get them sorted out. But when you do, who are you going to call? The police isn't always the best place to start. Abandoned cars and antisocial parking are dealt with by the local council. Untaxed cars should be reported to the DVLA, and lost or found dogs reported to the dog warden." Jobs to do this week in the garden. Watering plants, particularly those in pots or newly planted, is your main job when it's hot and dry. Water plants thoroughly. A little trickle will just evaporate off the surface. Move pots, if possible, into shade. You can increase your stock of border carnations by layering. Choose a healthy side shoot that isn't flowering, bend it over without snapping the stem, and peg it firmly into the ground with some wire. Cover the stem with soil and water it in. Irises that have become congested can be divided to improve vigour. Lift them carefully to avoid damaging the rhizomes and gently split them apart and replant. Are you having trouble with earwigs on your dahlias? Make traps with pots stuffed with shredded paper and remove the earwigs daily. And lastly, prune back climbing and rambling roses when they finish flowering.
This is Ruth back. Well, that's all for this edition. My thanks go to all our readers and to our registrars, Jackie Godbeer and Zena Johnson, and also to our producer, Tony Charnock. Thanks to Archant Publications for the use of the copy from their publications. May I remind all listeners to ensure your wallet is returned promptly. You will hear from this team next on the 8th of October. And now, from all of us, goodbye. Goodbye.